weekday 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Biden and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping spent 4 hours talking on the sidelines of the APEC meeting. It was their first face-to-face meeting in a year. Since then, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan last year was viewed as a provocation by China. CBS's Wee Jia Jiang.
They have essentially said that they have a common goal, which is to coexist, to compete, but to not veer into that conflict or confrontation. But of course, sorting out how they will do that, putting up guardrails, and making sure they can communicate is the goal here, which President Biden said is his top priority and how he would define a successful summit with Xi.
CBS's Deborah Pata on what the Israelis say they found after storming the besieged Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City looking for Hamas militants.
When Israeli soldiers finally entered, not a single shot was fired.
There is an AK-47.
But they say they found proof that Hamas was operating there, showing this as evidence.
These weapons have absolutely no business being inside a hospital.
What they did not show were any Hamas fighters, and they made no mention of the tunnels they've repeatedly said double up as the group's command center underneath the complex.
During his testimony before the House Homeland Security Committee, FBI Director Christopher Wray spoke about an increase in reports of threats since the October 7th Hamas terror attacks and war declared by Israel.
The biggest chunk of the threats that have been reported into us by a good margin are threats to the Jewish community, synagogues, Jewish prominent officials, things like that.
Wray also noted an increase in threats against Muslim Americans. The Senate is next expected to vote on a stopgap funding bill that would push off a spending fight until early next year. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
For those looking for it and listening for it, there are warning sirens flashing and blaring about January 19th. A government shutdown isn't just a possibility, but the prospects are increasingly likely. A protracted government shutdown.
This holiday season, you may have to pay to return a gift, CBS's Wendy Gillette reports.
An estimated 40% of retailers are charging return fees this year, including H&M, Dillard's, and TJ Maxx. Neil Saunders is managing director of the consulting firm Global Data Retail.
The days when you could just use any retailer and all the returns were free and the consumer had to bear no cost and really not give much consideration to returns has gone.
The new policies could help companies lessen the waste they produce.
This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Roll into this Friday night and strike a chord of fun, food, and music at Foxview Lanes in Waukesha. A Friday night live music party kicks off.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. There's a run on new opportunities for high-speed internet in rural Wisconsin. The state has $42 million worth of grants to give out, but the number of applications it got asked for more than 221 million. More than 251,000 locations in Wisconsin still lack service, and about as many have internet that's below current standards. The Public Service Commission will now start poring over the applications. People who help their older and disabled loved ones at home for no money are asking for help from the state of Wisconsin. Martha Cranley is director of AARP Wisconsin.
Each year, Wisconsin's unpaid family caregivers provide about 538 million hours of care to their parents, spouses, and partners, and they do it for no pay.
A bill called the CARE Act would require hospitals to work with caregivers to make sure they're getting what they need. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks in Toronto tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks playing the Raptors in Toronto. The last time the Bucks faced the Raptors, they lost in Toronto by a score of 130 to 111. Before tonight's game, we learned that Giannis Antetokounmpo would not play due to a sore calf muscle. No word yet on how serious that injury is. Baseball, a press conference at American Family Field has been called for tomorrow morning to announce that Pat Murphy is the new manager of the Brewers. Murphy's been with the crew since 2016 as the team's bench coach and former Brewers infielder Ricky Weeks being named associate manager. NFL. Packers back at practice. They host the Chargers Sunday. Jordan Love on finally scoring some points in the first half against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think last week, just starting the game fast and being able to put up points early was a huge step, something we've been, you know, harping on and focusing on, which I think that'll definitely carry over to be able to continue that. And then, yeah, I think just continue to finish those games.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Clear skies tonight with a low of 39. Winds out of the south around 5 miles an hour. High of 65 tomorrow. Cloudy tomorrow night. Chance for scattered showers, 40. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Two-year anniversary of the bipartisan infrastructure law. The president spent a little time doing some tweeting today, or at least his staff did, talking about all of the Republicans who voted against the bipartisan infrastructure law, but yet took credit for it. And you got to love that. I was against this little piece of it over here, but I'm going to take credit for everything else, but didn't vote for it. That always cracked me up. Always made me laugh that, you know, you're going to be against it, but you're for it. So you were for it before you were against it, or against it and for it. I'm confusing why you would then go out to the public and go, look at all the wonderful stuff I'm bringing back to my state. Look at the bridges and the roads and the whole things, all that stuff. But I didn't vote for it. And the interesting thing today, because our quote of the day comes from Texas representative, Republican representative Chip Roy, who I've always said is crazy. I have not been a huge Chip Roy fan over the years, but Chip evidently has been watching the show. And Chip, I think, kind of understands the reality of the world that we're in. So here's what Chip had to say, just to get a thought here. Here's
one
Chip.
Thing. I want my Republican colleagues to give me one thing, one that I can go campaign on and say we did. One. Anybody sitting in the complex, if you want to come down to the floor and come explain to me one material, meaningful, significant thing the Republican majority has done, one.
if we're talking about what, I just did the dumbest thing I've done in probably all the years I've been doing this. We've been having major tech issues for the last couple of weeks. And I just had really the worst moment of probably my existence. because I, you know, like, look, you know, the reality is the Biden folks have been doing a great job. Today they tweeted out, oh man, have you ever had one of those days? I can't get over it. It is quite, our tech issues are just driving me insane. But the White House put out a series of tweets today that there are more congressional Republicans taking credit for Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law because, hey, this is the second anniversary of the bipartisan infrastructure law. And they went through and they talked about a number of the Republicans who did not vote for it. And this is one of those things where you go, at what point do you say, hey, you didn't vote for it. You don't get to take credit for it. It doesn't work that way. But you got Tommy Tuberville, you got Tom Cotton, you got Boozman, you got a bunch of Republicans out there saying, hey, yeah, we were against it, but we were for it. We're for it, against it, you know, all of that. But the quote of the day, Chip Roy, quote of the day, and I love Chip Roy, crazy right-wing zealot. But he had an interesting statement, and this comes back to something that I think is really important. Chip had this to say.
One thing. I want my Republican colleagues to give me one thing, one, that I can go campaign on and say we did. One. Anybody sitting in the complex, if you want to come down to the floor and come explain to me one material, meaningful, significant thing the Republican majority has done. One thing. I want my Republican colleagues to give me.
Just one thing. That's all they want. And he's right. You know, just one thing. But I want to hear your thoughts. We will fix our tech issues after the break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So at the end of this, I come back to Republicans have almost nothing to run on in 2024. And as I said, you know, the Biden folks, lot to run on, a lot to get through. And I think that is a good thing. Let's go to Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you today?
Yes, I'm fine. And I wanted to expand upon what you were talking about. I mean, it's absolutely true. Republicans had nothing to run on because they are the party of no. There's no vision. Usually a party needs some sort of a platform and a vision for how you move the country forward in terms of holding power. But no, they've just become the party of whatever the Democrats are for, we are against. Whatever progressive politics is for, we are against. I suppose that there are people who might support a political ideology that is against something, but you've also got to substitute something that you're for, you know, because things don't run themselves. And then this is an old formula with regard to taking credit for the things that you oppose. I mean, we already have seen evidence of this. I mean, so the number of Republicans who are going to take credit for the infrastructure bill that they opposed in the upcoming 24 election cycle is going to be remarkable. You know, so they'll be like, your state got X number of hundreds of millions of dollars and this and this and this, billions. And, you know, we've done these projects and it's lowered unemployment, it's created jobs, it's created contracts, all of this sort of thing. We've done that for you. No, actually, you're part of the party that voted against it, actually wanted to reduce the infrastructure bill and was successful in doing so because we needed a much larger infrastructure bill to address the deficits with regard to what we haven't been spending on our infrastructure in decades. So it's just the irony of ironies. in terms of resolving the temporarily, at least, the budget crisis so that we don't go into the Thanksgiving holiday with places like, oh, I don't know, the TSA and not being fully funded and therefore people waiting in line for 4 hours to get on a flight. Yeah, they knew that they needed to have some sort of a short-term vote, some sort of a short-term plan. And the thing of it is that it's only through Democratic votes that was able to pass, meant that Republicans, select Republicans, were free to then vote against it once they knew that it would pass, so that you can go back home and say, well, you know what, I stood my ground against, you know, the swamp and the deep state and everything else, and, you know, I was one of the people who voted against it, knowing full well that if it came down to your vote, you would have voted for it, as opposed to voting against it. But you were free, you know, to vote against it because you knew it was going to pass. I mean, people, they really don't understand. They don't do this for a living. So they just think that, you know, okay, this was the vote and this is how people voted. There's a whole lot of political calculus that goes into this.
No, you're spot on right. And this is how we don't get the things that we need addressed. This kind of gamesmanship, this kind of political calculus, as you say. It's the reason that working people never get what we need out of our Congress.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you pointed out yesterday, you know, we end up covering, you know, ridiculous things like challenging each other to a fight and that kind of nonsense. I mean, that was an important, you know, hearing in which a labor representative needed to be talking about that issue in front of senators. And instead, what did we take from that? If you ask any American, it wasn't about what that meeting was supposed to be about. No, it ended up being about some ridiculous, 19th century honor code sort of nonsense. You know, hey, you insulted me, let's step outside, crap, like we're in a bar or something. And, you know, that's the thing, is that I'm afraid that unlike in 2020, the thing about COVID was it did manage to crystallize things for people in this country. And a lot of people got interested in things like public policy and politics that hadn't been otherwise interested. And because, quite frankly, you know, we all know that, look, we were stuck at home. There were no concerts, there were no ball games, there were no new movies, you know, everything was shut down, and politics was sort of the name of the game. And people got involved and got interested in it and so forth, but then after COVID, I predicted, you know, young people's interest will fall away, most of the rest of us will go back to wondering what our favorite sports team is doing, what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is doing, what all this other nonsense that goes on that preoccupies our time. The kind of thing that Noam Chomsky talks about, you know, in terms of manufacturing consent. You know, one of the ways that you get people to sort of stop paying attention to what goes on in the world is to distract them with a lot of other nonsense and convince them that what Kim Kardashian is doing is really important.
Bread and circus.
What your congressman is doing. Yeah, exactly. You know, the Romans knew it. We don't want to suspend the games. Oh, wait, it's time to, you know, we move beyond this. It's barbaric. No, if you don't let people have the games, they might start paying attention to what's going on in the society in which we live. So, yeah, the Romans knew that 2,000 years ago, and things have not changed. The only thing that's changed is perhaps we're not actually killing each other in terms of mixed martial arts tournaments. But, you know, it's pretty damn close. You know, but it just goes to show you that human nature doesn't change all that much.
No, you're spot on right. Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much. Let's go to Alice on line 2. Alice, what's on your mind? How you doing?
semi-coherent.
To start.
What I wanted to... Yeah, a little bit of an improvement. What I wanted to say was this. I think that the Republicans, some of them are setting up going, wait a minute, we got bad news in Ohio, we got bad news in this state, that state. Some of our constituents are calling us, complaining because we, you know, are doing whatever or whatnot. Then we had the Lauren Boebert nonsense. MGT's acting like a twit. You know. So I don't think it's so much a worried about what they've done, but a more of a, oh, gee, what are we going to run on? Because apparently people are upset about things.
Yeah, because people need things done. I mean, that's the reality. People need lives to get better, and our elected leaders haven't done it. Appreciate the thoughts, Alice. Thanks. Which brings me to this, you know, this story that I came across. I think it was the Washington Post that had this story on ballot initiatives in a place in a red state like Nebraska, and they point out that look, you know, a lot of progressive ideas are very popular, and the one thing that they were talking about in this small town of Crete, Nebraska, where, you know, citizens are organizing to push a ballot initiative to get paid sick days. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, this person who was, you know, on their time off, you know, going around collecting signatures for what is viewed as a very liberal, progressive policy. And, you know, they want to put this on the ballot to give people the opportunity to get at least 5 paid sick days a year if you work in Nebraska. And look, they've tried this a couple of times since 2016, failed in the Nebraska legislature. They've tried it in Congress. It's you know, I think it's passed the House, dead on arrival in the Senate. You know, and understand, it's popular. Working people, especially working families, understand the need to have some paid sick time. But what we've got is, you know, exactly what Steve and Alice are talking about. We've got an ideologically divided Congress that are polarized to no end. I'm in my camp. I've got my hat. You got yours. And we can't talk to each other. We can't solve simple problems, let alone big ones. And look, it isn't just in D.C. You know, the state legislatures are just as bad because they're so badly gerrymandered that you don't even have balance. So one party rams through its agenda and the other, well, and in a red state like Nebraska, the agenda is not worker friendly. In a red state like Nebraska, paid sick days, minimum wage increases, this kind of stuff, not making it through the legislature. You have to go through the ballot initiative if you're fortunate enough to be in one of the couple of dozen states that allow citizen-sponsored referendums. My state does not. And look, you know, citizen-led referendums have been very popular to raise minimum wage, to legalize, you know, marijuana, expand Medicaid, all kinds of stuff. The abortion thing, you know, Ohio, you know, just a perfect example. And look, they've even done it, you know, red and purple states like Kansas and Kentucky and Montana, where you go, whoa, because the legislature won't do it. And this is where, again, our political system seems to be broken. Now you go, well, this is direct democracy. This is democracy in action. Yeah, but this isn't how it's supposed to. This is not how our system was supposed to work. We were supposed to have representatives of the people go do what the mass of the people want. And look, overwhelmingly, these pro-worker policies, this pro-worker agenda is popular. It is something that needs to be moved and accomplished. But they make it so hard. And on purpose. Especially if you don't have huge bankrolls. Now understand, INR may be fun. Initiative and referendums may be fun for voters. It's not perfect. Because sadly, big money usually wins. There are some things that I would have liked to have seen not taken. And it comes back to where we're in this weird world where our representatives aren't listening to the people anymore because they're not concerned about being voted out. They're not concerned about what we the people think anymore, it seems. Because red hat, blue hat, purple hat, you know, doesn't matter. The people I talk to and I go, hey, are you happy about what's coming out of the Republican-led Congress right now? Are you happy with what they're doing? And to a person, the answer is no. Because individuals' needs, community needs, society's needs are not being met. Now, there are some who are like, well, government shouldn't do anything. And, you know, I go back to my visit to the Teddy Roosevelt inaugural site where, you know, what do you think we should do on that board? You know, we need more states' rights. What does that look like? If we go to this utopian world of each state being able to do what it wants, we don't have a representative democracy in most states. And that's the weird, bizarre thing. So I'm not sure where we're heading in this day, but I'll tell you what's concerning to me is our elected officials, our representatives aren't listening. And there's part of me that goes, you know, we vote for people and they dig in. Because it's then all about getting reelected. It's not about doing things anymore. And I've often said, you know, even with, you know, I have Joe Walsh on the program quite often, and Joe and I disagree on policy wholeheartedly, but we both agree that we could probably sit down and iron something out that for the good of the country, for the good of our constituents, for the good of working people, there's always a pathway forward. But that isn't what our Congress is doing. And the sad reality is you've got a Republican Congress that's done nothing. And Chip Roy is right. I don't often agree with Chip Roy. He's right. They have nothing to run on. They haven't even passed messaging bills. I mean, because you do this performatively. You go out and you pass a bill, you know, hey, we're going to think of anything. We're going to execute, you know, people within, you know, 3 months of a crime or whatever. And you get people all riled up. Yeah, we're going to do that. Knowing that the Senate's never going to allow that to happen. The president's going to veto it. They aren't even doing the messaging bills that you would think they would. Hey, we're going to go. We're going to bust every labor union. Yeah, let's. Corporate America's thrilled. Or, you know, we're going to make abortion illegal for everybody, you know, from the moment of conception or from the moment of thinking about conception. And the basic, yay, we're going to vote for you. They aren't even doing those things, which I got to tell you is really bizarre. Because that's what they're supposed to be running on, their record. And what is their record? Their record's chaos. Their record's crazy. Their record is not just doing nothing, but causing chaos and destruction while doing nothing. We almost had a shutdown for no reason. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Is this the future? Will we, the voters, wake up and start throwing some of these bums to the curb? Or will some of them retire off and maybe we get... Maybe I'm just being too hopeful. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back after this.
The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. President Biden is speaking about the four-hour face-to-face meeting he had with Chinese President Xi Jinping today. Mr. Biden says they talked about, among other things, resuming communication between both countries' military leaders.
We're reassuming military-to-military contact, direct contacts. As a lot of you press know who follow this, that's been cut off, and it's been very worrisome. That's how accidents happen.
The fentanyl problem was also discussed between the two.
I'm pleased to announce that after many years of being on hold, we are restarting cooperation between the United States and PRC on counter-narcotics.
President Biden says his talks with Xi was constructive and productive, and it took place on the sidelines of the APEC conference. It was the first face-to-face meeting the two leaders have had in a year. CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
We'll be right back.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers is lifting lockdowns at state prisons in Waupun and Green Bay. Inmates have been confined to their cells for months because of safety worries and not enough guards. Inmates will soon get access to more prison programs, and some inmates in Waupun will be moved out. The governor says he's also keen on hiring more guards. Starting pay for those jobs went up to $33 an hour in the new state budget. More young people are taking part in Wisconsin's registered apprenticeship program than ever before. The paid training program combines on-the-job learning and education from technical colleges and private training centers. More than 16,000 apprentices are taking part. That's the highest number in the program's 112 years. Workforce development officials say the program is a way to bring job seekers and employers together. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Clear skies tonight with a low of 39. Winds out of the south around 5 miles an hour. High of 65 tomorrow. Cloudy tomorrow night. Chance for scattered showers, 40. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 37 degrees.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Let's talk about the debate over stadium renovations at American Family Field, what the team's going to kick in, what they're willing to kick in, what state legislators are willing to approve. There have been some more adjustments to the bill, and I'll admit I haven't talked much about it because I feel like everything's all still rather fluid.
I think fluid is the right word, Pat. You're a man of words. Way to go. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Be a part of the resistance. Check out the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK, and on the Civic Media app. Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I saw an interesting quote today that got me thinking, because the Screen Actors Guild and the writers and all those folks were on strike for all that time, fighting for better wages, hours, conditions. I think it was like 146 days they were on strike, something like that. And one of the CEOs, this David Zaslav, Warner Brothers Discovery CEO, was quoted saying that the people with the strikers, they were right about almost everything. So what if we overpay? I never regret overpaying for great talent or a great asset. And I'm going, well, where were you at the beginning of this? You know, where were you going? No, don't strike here. We're going to give you what you need to allay some of your fears of a future replacement. Where were you then? Well, I don't know. That's why I've asked my good friend Elliot Bales to come talk with us. Elliot is an actor, and he's also a member of the Screen Actors Guild, SAG-AFTRA, and Actors Equity. He is a member of the SAG-AFTRA Washington Mid-Atlantic Local Board, also a retired Army colonel. Elliot, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you again. Thanks for the chance.
So what do you make of this comment?
Well, first of all, let me always say, as I say anytime I get on air and start talking, I'm speaking for myself. It's my own point of view. I don't represent the union or any faction thereof or any political party from either side. So this
you
is
got the thought. Disclaimer out there.
Got the disclaimer out there. Now I can say whatever I want. First of all, I think what every one of us knows who's worked labor negotiations from either side of the table knows that the first message that has to come out is the prelude to the next contract negotiation. So this is the first shot by a CEO saying, yeah, these guys are great, but we gave them too much. So next time we're going to ask for it to come back. So I know it is what it is. That's rhetoric. And I think the more we separate rhetoric from the reality, I think the real part of that statement is, yes, these people were exactly right about where the industry is going and what we're trying to do. The quote smacked of me as an old soldier, like the famous World War One story where the general comes up to the trenches for the first time in his pristine uniform and the doughboys are down there all muddy. And he looks across the field in his binoculars across no man's land. And he says, you know what? I'd give 10,000 men to take that hill. And the soldiers hear this and they look up and go, he's a generous bastard, ain't he? And that's what this sounds like. Well, I'd give, I'll overpay for anything until shareholders. I think it's better for the shareholders to comment on that than for us. But I think it just says, hey, the model's there. We have the money. We should be paying for this because this is where. This is our bread and butter.
I took that differently. I'm going, you're not overpaying anyone. You're paying for a product. You're paying for labor. You're paying for people's blood, sweat, and tears. And I would doubt, I would argue you're not even overpaying. Right. So for me, that's where I took the slap in the face.
Well, the overpayment piece is setting up the contract, the next negotiation.
Right.
So I heard that as a negotiator. I heard that as a person who's been on both sides of the table. I heard, okay, you're saying we overpaid you, so we're gonna try and cut it down the next time. And our message is no, we're gonna ask for a lot more because we didn't get everything we wanted. I will always take it as an insult to being told that me making enough money to feed my family is overpayment. That me being able to pay rent is overpayment or pay my mortgage. Me being able to not even be able to buy a Ford. As you and I were talking over, is in make a payment. That's one of the things I found when I was talking with the guys. We did a couple of events, went out to a couple of the struck UAW facilities, and they were saying, you know, back in the day when we started, you could, you know, the whole thing was Henry Ford, like him or don't, was every worker ought to be able to afford a Ford. And now the guys were saying, I can't even afford the down payment on any vehicle that we make. And that on the wages that were being paid.
Right.
And so, yeah, you're not overpaying us if that's all we're doing is coming back up to where inflation has kept us 3 years in arrears.
Now, let's talk.
Yes, I agree with the response, but I know what it is. I know where it comes from.
Yeah, I mean, you were right. I mean, and you go, wow, that was nice of him to say you were right about everything. But did you have to go through all of the pain and the suffering and the struggle to get to a mutual an agreement that isn't horrible? Because I've heard some good things and I've heard some bad things. So give me your assessment of what was negotiated ultimately, what the tentative agreement brought you.
There were five things that we set out to begin with to have this negotiation. The first was make up for what has happened to us over, frankly, three negotiating cycles where they won and we didn't play hardball, as well as the rate of inflation dramatically increased. So we needed to catch up to where we got pay parity, where we're at least going to be making the same in 3 years that we're making yesterday. We needed to fix our health plan. They had lagged on making contributions. We had not fought enough for that. So we needed to go after a greater contribution health plan. We needed to fix residuals. And I talked the last time a little bit about that's how our compensation structure is. It's expensive to make a TV show or movie up front. So we get a session fee that pays for our daily rate for being there. And that's a little more than you normally get because you only work 15 to 20 days a year on one of these big pictures that make billions of dollars. And so on the back end, when it gets released to the theater or you see it on TV, that's when we get something called residuals, which is we get a share of our pay, which comes later. And there were whole sections of streaming that we were either not getting paid enough or we weren't getting paid at all in the residual pool. And then the fourth thing was this AI issue about having people scanned and we're going to use it forever. We're never going to pay you again. The fifth thing, though, which I think was the most important, and we haven't talked a lot about it. I know the president and the executive director talked about it, was to break the pattern of bargaining. That we had followed this pattern of bargaining for about 40 years, where they came in with the same things, we came with the same asks, and nothing really ever changed. It just incrementally went along lagging. And that was the most important thing that changed, is we significantly changed the pattern of bargaining, that we're not going to settle for playing the same game the same way. And they walked out of negotiation. They had, I think the guys told us, out of all the time they spent, they might have spent 12 hours together in the room over 118 days.
Wow.
Where the negotiators were actually there. It was mostly our folks working together to try and take and then pass across. We'd pass across a response. The first response they gave was the day we called the strike, which they just essentially said, yeah, we're not doing any of this stuff. We're just going to give you what we gave you the first day. So, yeah, it was entirely in their ballpark to say, we're going to have to change. We're going to have to make some deals here. And they didn't do that. Yeah, and the longer it went, I think I came on here and said mid-November. I've said all along November 15th was the date I got on my wall. And November 8th, I think, was the day. So I felt like pretty good about that. We made gains in every one of those areas. I think the most concerning thing that people had is this artificial intelligence piece. And it's mainly because it's this boogeyman that we don't understand. And it's the fear of its robots are going to take over, do everything. And every union is dealing with this. And for the first time, we actually have 18 pages of contract negotiation language that say, this is how we're going to control the use of artificial intelligence to replicate individuals. It is not the end. It is not perfect. And it is not everything we wanted. But it is the first time a union has ever put that kind of language that protects individual rights about having your face and your body or your words, your voice replicated and used without your permission. So we have to have informed consent. We have to have compensation each time it gets used. So it means you want to take the scan, great. It's going to cost you $30,000-$40,000 to make, but you're going to still pay us every time. So you may as well just pay us every time.
Yeah, might as well have the actual person do it instead of the construct. Because that's, you know, I was saying all during the strike that this is really on this AI front, the front lines of the AI war. And what comes out of this is going to be kind of the starting point for everyone else down the road. So you're pleased with how this came out. Yes, no?
I mean, as a negotiator and as a strategist, knowing we have for the next three negotiation cycles, this is how I think, that we have set a baseline where we've actually gotten new concessions from the employer and new protections for the first time in several different areas, residuals and AI being, there's things about ethnic hair care. There's things about recognition of Martin Luther King Jr. and Juneteenth as holidays, days in our work schedule. Those were not there before. Those are now. So a bunch of other things in this contract that will kind of go below the radar, but are very, very important parts. And especially things we brought forward from our local. These were issues. Pretty much everything that we put on the table is in there. So I think I'm happy with where this negotiation got us and sets us up for the next one. Good. I'm also happy that we now can feed this protection into both labor law, and when we have complaints about violation of labor law, we could take it using the existing laws, and then also to lobby Congress. We already have, I don't know if you saw the No Fakes Act, which has not been introduced by the Senate yet. It's you know, one of those things where they pass it all around, let's formalize the language. When you got Chris Coons and Amy Klobuchar on the Democrat side, and Tom Tillis and Marsha Blackburn on the Republican side agreeing to something, you get something that's got everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's the most important thing, is that we put a marker in the ground that said, everybody follow us. And we have another contract negotiation on the net code contract, which we have, which is your award shows and your talk shows, that's our performers work on. The writers do the same. That's next year. Teamsters and the Stagehands Union goes into contract next year. So we've set the bar for everyone to continue to follow us at a much higher level than has been done before. That, for me, from a strategic perspective, is great.
No, it's really good stuff. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Elliot Bales. Elliot's an actor and a member of the SAG-AFTRA union, also Actors Equity. He's a member of the SAG-AFTRA Washington Mid-Atlantic Local Board. Been my go-to guy on this strike almost from the beginning when we met in Washington, D.C., and I love having you on. Now, obviously, you've got this tentative agreement. Any chance the membership doesn't ratify it? I mean, it's always in the back. Any chance of that?
I am never going to say no, because I said Donald Trump would never become president of the United States. So I'm not going to say no ever again on anything. And I'm a and I'm a recovering conservative, so it's okay. You know, that's not a political issue. That's an individual issue. But the there's always a chance that it won't. I think there are enough of us who want to go back to work and believe that we should not. As an example, background performers who have made who right now make $186 a day to go stand and be the crowds that you see in a scene. That's, you know, they got to work a lot of days to make a living at that. Their pay increases 18% over the next 2 years, 2.5 years. That's a pretty big win. And to abandon that because you don't like the AI language would be silly. And so, but I also think we're a union that listens to people finally. And so everybody's getting their voice, everybody's getting their say. And as we have conversations, most of the people who are naysayers are picking one issue. And we're constantly, those of us who, you know, and I say up front, I'm voting yes on this contract. I've spent a few days with it now. That take the thing as a whole and take the next view to the next three, you know, contract that we're going to negotiate in a year and then 2 years and 2.5 years from now. And does this set us up for a stronger position going into that negotiation? The answer is yes.
Good.
So I think people will come around to seeing that. Generally, we can count about 50. I think it'll be about the same as our national board representation, which was 86% recommended approval. So if I've got to put a number on the table, I'd say it's probably going to be about that.
Good. Yeah, because it's one of those questions that keeps coming up. You know, is it worth it to go on strike? And I say, look, you know, strikes have their value. Sometimes no one wants to do it, but it's the last arrow in the quiver, I believe. And sometimes you got to pull it out. So was it worth it? I guess that's the question to you.
I think this time it was. It would be. I would always be very reticent to do that. But when we were faced with the statements, especially for the Writers Guild, going out before we were, and we were faced with this pattern of bargaining of let's pick off one union and let's pick off the other and then let's demand that the other union. That's what we faced. Well, we gave them this, that you should take that. Totally different contracts, totally different pay structure. It's like you're not even in the same ballpark, guys. So breaking that pattern, we knew was going into this was going to be the thing we had to do. We could not let that game get played anymore. And we'd watch it happen, especially for the last three cycles of negotiation. So this really needed to be a fundamental shift. And the time was right. When you have 88% of young people under the age of 30 who want to join a union, when does that happen? That has, it's been forever than that's been a part of our national psyche. No. So the point's here. The time is here for the labor movement to say, you know what, we've gone too far the other way. And yeah, sometimes we demand too much and we got to kind of come back to reality. That's kind of what's happening now in our conversation about where we could have gotten to this time. But there's a place where you draw the line and say, the next time will be this one. But this is a lot more than we had. Nice. And for that reason, I say the strike was worth it.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, you start negotiating with what you want, not with what you'll take. And you move your way back. That's any good negotiator, I'll tell you that. But Elliot, I appreciate you sharing some time and keep getting us up to date on this. Congratulations. I hope the ratification vote goes through as you have said it. Hopefully it does. And I wish you the best, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick, and keep preaching the good news. See you soon.
Thanks so much, Elliot Bales. Make sure you check out his website, elliotbales.com. We'll get links out on social media. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back after this. Stick around.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that federal agents stormed the offices of the Industrial Workers of the World in New York City. They were looking for evidence connecting the organization to radical communists or anarchists. The ransacked office was part of the infamous Palmer Raids. When Attorney General Alexander Palmer responded to the growing Red Scare hysteria by raiding the offices of leftist organizations and arresting thousands. Hundreds of immigrants to the United States were deported during the raids without legal due process. The 1917 Russian Revolution had stoked fears about a spreading communist threat. Newspaper headlines helped to drum up public panic. A week before the IWW raid, a headline on the front page of the Evening World, published in New York City, declared, "Reds in U.S. plotted revolution. Deportation for all radicals." The day after the IWW raid, a Washington Post headline read, "Law to crush Reds." Writing in 1920, Attorney General Palmer warned, quote, "The chief appeal communism makes is to the worker. If they can lure the wage earner to join their own gang of thieves, if they can show him that he will be rich if he steals, so far they have succeeded in betraying him to their own criminal course." Palmer went on to describe how communists had, quote, "stirred discontent, caused irritating strikes, and infected our social ideas with the disease of their own minds and their unclean morals." Palmer's references to workers and irritating strikes demonstrate that he perceived the labor movement as part of the communist threat. Anti-communist hysteria took its toll on the most radical elements of the U.S. labor movement, especially the IWW.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, Mr. Free Speech bought Twitter because he believes in free speech, and then went about charging everybody for the check mark to get you heard. But Mr. Free Speech, Elon Musk, he is a free speech absolutist. He believes in free speech, he says, except where it comes to him. He evidently now, thanks to the far-right Fifth Circuit Court, can deny Tesla workers the right to wear union apparel. No more. Again, this has been something that's been in law in this country since at least 1945. So this is long decided law. This has been long decided. Employers try and fight it and go through all this. But yeah, it's Musk who's now got a favorable decision to say, no, you workers who are going to try and organize, because the Tesla workers have already set up an organizing committee. No, you cannot wear a t-shirt that has that union on it. Yeah, this is where we're going. And look, with the Supreme Court that we have now, do you think that they're willing to overturn something that's been decided law since 1945? Oh, you bet. I'm sure they can dream up some stuff quite easily. And maybe, you know, this whole idea, the Heritage Foundation actually put out a paper on ruling the NLRB itself unconstitutional, doing away with that. Because, you know, we don't need unions anymore. That's something we needed when they were, you know, there were children working in the slaughterhouses. Oh, wait a second. That's happening now. Huh. Yeah. Some good news coming out of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, and this is a good thing. Some union leaders today at the Capitol held a shindig talking about a piece of legislation that they are going to be moving on, and actually passed. It passed out of the House with 5 Republican votes. Yes, there were 5 Republicans that voted for it. House Bill 1481, which would allow workers who go on strike or are locked out to collect unemployment benefits. Now, as I understand the legislation, if you go out on strike, it would be a 30-day waiting period. So after 30 days on strike, you could then collect unemployment. If you're locked out, it would be immediate. You'd get unemployment because you didn't choose to go on strike. Now, New Jersey and New York already have this on their books. So this is just, you know, Pennsylvania going, hey, we'd like to do that. And look, you had Adam Schiff, who's running for Senate out in California, who brought it to the U.S. House of Representatives. The Empowering Striking Workers Act of 2023, not going to pass in the House. A Republican House, a do-nothing Republican House. Doubt it even gets a vote. But this is one of those pieces of legislation that you put out there because, one, you hope it passes, because I think it would be really good for working people. But two, it is a messaging bill. Immediately, the crazy right-wing think tank in town went, as you would expect, full-on crazy. You know, taxpayers shouldn't be funding strikes. And you go, no, working people would be funding it. And this is where, you know, they're saying that it would increase the number of strikes. It would make people want to go on strike. And no, nobody wants to go on strike. It shows how fundamentally they don't understand any of this. I believe if you were to pass this kind of legislation, you would have less strikes. Because employers wouldn't try what union busting consultants tell them to do, which is what we saw with the Screen Actors and the Writers Guild. We're going to starve them out. We're going to make them lose their homes and go bankrupt. That's an employer tactic. You know, we're going to make them hurt. And then they'll come back and we'll give them less. That's one of their negotiating tactics. So if you take that out of the equation and you say, look, you know, after 30 days, if you're on strike, if you haven't figured this out and the employer hasn't negotiated, you know what? We're going to help ease the pain. Maybe employers aren't going to be pushing that way. Maybe if it will go on longer, maybe they'll say, hey, let's just sit down and figure this out. But while the pendulum is so far to the side of employers, knowing that, look, most working people are one, two paychecks away from economic distress, maybe this little bit would change that dynamic a little bit. Now, understand, unemployment is not a living. You know, the reality is it replaces in Pennsylvania, I think, just about 40% of your lost wages. I don't know anybody who can live on 40% of their wages for an extended period of time. So it better be a really good reason, like, you know, being replaced by AI. So now, will it pass the Senate here in Pennsylvania? No. It's probably dead on arrival in the Senate, but it shouldn't be, because I did have a couple of conversations with people, just some, you know, quick thoughts with people. You go, hey, you know, I know you're not in a union, but what do you think of this? And most people that I talked to didn't care one. You know, so what? Or said, well, I can see how that could be helpful. Now, again, I come back to, nobody wants to go on strike. Nobody. But people do want to make sure that they get better wages, hours, conditions, that they get a fair share of the wealth that their labor creates. And I go back to this Zavlov, this Discovery Channel, Warner Brothers CEO. They were right. They were right all along. But they just chose not to listen, because they could. And maybe this would help. Want to hear your thoughts. Is it a good idea? Bad idea? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.